Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, Minister of the 12th Hour, First Christ Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion, the 12th Hour, Libertyville, Texas. Today is June 17, 2016, or it is the 13th day of the 4th month, 2020. We will start our first service today with a song entitled, The Solid Rock. My hope is built on nothing less than Yahshua's blood and His righteousness. I dare not trust the sweetest friend, but wholly lean on Yahshua's name. On Yahshua the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand. All other ground is sinking sand. When darkness seems to hide His face, I'll rest on His unchanging grace. In every high and stormy gale, my anchor holds within the veil. On Yahshua the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand. All other ground is sinking sand. His oath is covenant, His blood support me in the whelming flood. When all around my soul gives way, He then is all my hope and stay. Yahshua the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand. All other ground is sinking sand. When He shall come with trumpet sound, oh, may I then in Him be found. Dressed in His righteousness alone, thoughtless to stand before the throne. On Yahshua the solid rock I stand, all other ground is sinking sand. All other ground is sinking sand. Revival and Reformation Part 1. We're going to start a new series here. This is what we need to learn about, is how to have revival and reformation. And to start this here, the Last Day Movement, to bring in the harvest of the world, starting with the living, 144,000. We have Time of Greetings, Volume 2, Number 6. We're going to start the beginning of that again. We did that partly on the last part of our last study, but we're going to do it on the first part of our study today again. There's some new stuff that we need to look at here. We're going to forego the prayer thought, but we're going to have a different type of prayer thought. We're going to read from 2 Kings chapter 10. There's 36 verses in it. It says, and Ahab had 70 sons in Samaria. Now keep in mind, Ahab was a king of Israel. He was a very evil king. Let's go ahead and read about it. And he had 70 sons in Samaria. And Jehu wrote letters and sent to Samaria unto the rulers of Jezreel, to the elders and to them that brought up Ahab's children, saying, now as soon as this letter cometh to you, seeing your master's sons are with you, and there are with you chariots and horses, a fenced city also in armor, look even out the best and meetest of your master's sons, and sit them on his father's throne, and sit him on his father's throne, and fight for your master's house. But they were exceedingly afraid and said, behold, two kings stood not before him. How then shall we stand? And he that was over the house and he that was over the city, for the elders also, and the bringers up of the children sent unto Jehu, saying, We are thy servants, and will do all that thou shalt bid us. We will not make any king. Do thou that which is good in thine eyes. Then he wrote a letter the second time to them, saying, If you be mine, and if you will hearken unto my voice, take ye the heads of the men, your master's sons, and come to me to Jezreel by tomorrow this time. Now the king's sons, being 70 persons, were with the great men of the city, which brought them up. And it came to pass when the letter came unto them, that they took the king's sons and slew 70 persons, and put their heads in baskets, and sent him of them unto Jezreel. And there came a messenger and told him, saying, They have brought the heads of the king's sons. And he said, Lay ye them in two heaps at the entering in of the gate until the morning. And it came to pass in the morning that he went out and stood and said unto all the people, Ye be righteous. Behold, I conspired against my master and slew him. But who slew all these? Know now that there shall fall unto the earth nothing of the word of Yahweh, which Yahweh spake concerning the house of Ahab. For the Yahweh hath done that which he spake by his servant Elijah. Okay. Now why are we reading this? Because Yahweh is going to break the bow in the battle out of the earth with this antitypical Elijah. Alright, so Jehu slew all that remained of the house of Ahab and Jezreel, and all his great men, and his kinsfolk, and his priests, until he left them none remaining. And he arose and departed, and came to Samaria, and as he was at the shearing house in the way, Jehu met him with the brethren of Ahaziah, king of Judah, and said, Who are ye? And he answered, We are the brethren of Ahaziah, and we go down to salute the children of the king and the children of the queen. And he said, Take them alive. And they took them alive and slew them at the pit of the shearing house, even 24 men. Neither left he any of them. And when he was departed thence, he lighted on Jehonadab, the son of Rechab, coming to meet him. And he saluted him and said unto him, Is thine heart right, as my heart is with thy heart? And Jehonadab answered, It is. If it be, give me thine hand. And he gave him his hand, and he took him up to him into the chariot. And he said, Come with me and see my zeal for the Yahweh. So they made him ride in his chariot. And when he came to Samaria, he slew all that remained unto Ahab in Samaria, till he had destroyed him according unto the saying of the Yahweh, which he spake unto Elijah. Jehu destroys Baal worship. Verse 18. And Jehu gathered all the people together and said unto them, Ahab served Baal a little, but Jehu shall serve him much. Now therefore call unto me all the prophets of Baal, all his servants, and all his priests. Let none be wanting, for I have great sacrifice to do unto Baal. Whosoever shall be wanting, he shall not live. But Jehu did it in the subtlety, to the intent that he might destroy the worshippers of Baal. And Jehu said, Proclaim a solemn assembly for Baal. And they proclaimed it. And Jehu sent through all the Israel, and all the worshippers of Baal came, so that there was not a man left that came not. And they came into the house of Baal, and the house of Baal was full from one end to another. And he said unto him that was over the vestry, bring forth vestments for all the worshippers of Baal. And he brought them forth vestments. And Jehu went, and Jehonadab the son of Rechab, into the house of Baal, and said unto the worshippers of Baal, Search and look that there be here with you none of the servants of Yahweh, but the worshippers of the Baal only. And when they went in to offer sacrifices and burnt offerings, Jehu appointed 80 men without and said, If any of, that's 85, let's see, 80 men, yeah, that's 80 men, and said, If any of the men whom I have brought into your hands escape, he that letteth him go, his life shall be for the life of him. And it came to pass, as soon as he had made an end of offering the burnt offering, that Jehu said to the guard and to the captain, Go in and slay them, let none come forth. And they smote them at the edge of the sword, and the guard and the captains cast them out, and went to the city of the house of Baal. And they brought forth the images out of the house of Baal, and burned them, and they brake down the image of Baal, and brake down the house of Baal, and made it a wrought house unto this day. Thus Jehu destroyed Baal out of Israel. Howbeit, from the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, who made Israel sin, Jehu departed not from after them, to wit, the golden calves that were in Bethel and that were in Dan. And Yahweh said unto Jehu, Because thou hast done well in executing that which is right in mine eyes, and hast done unto the house of Ahab according to all that was in mine heart, thy children of the fourth generation shall sit on the throne of Israel. But Jehu took no heed to walk in the law of Yahweh Elohim of Israel with all his heart, for he departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, which made Israel to sin. In those days Yahweh began to cut Israel short, and Hazael smote them in all the coasts of Israel, from Jordan eastward, all the land of Gilead, the Gadites and the Reubenites, the Manassehites, from Aroer, which is by the river Arnon, even Gilead and Bashan. Now we know what Gilead and Bashan is. Carmel, Gilead, and Bashan. Now the rest of the acts of the Jehu and all that he did and all his might, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? And Jehu slept with his fathers, and they buried him in Samaria, and Jehoahaz his son reigned in his stead. And the time that Jehu reigned over Israel in Samaria was 28 years. What are we learning here? Well, we're learning that we have to go through the antitype of this type that was made by Israel. Ahab being an evil king, he took unto himself to wife Jezebel, which was a foreigner. She was a heathen. She was a heathen goddess. And so Yahweh raised up people. Jehu became a king of Israel. He reigned for 28 years. And Yahweh told him to destroy all the inhabitants of Ahab, all of his household. So Jehu started with 70 of his sons. Now, let's go to our main study, Tiny Greetings, Volume 2, Number 6. And it says that our subject is found in the first second chapters of Hosea. So Hosea 1, verse 2, the beginning of the word of the Yahweh, by Hosea. And the Yahweh said unto Hosea, Go, take unto thee a wife of whoredoms, and children of whoredom, for the land hath committed great whoredom, departing from the Yahweh. We immediately see that this wife and these children symbolize Elohim's people departing from him, and that such a wicked act he calls whoredom. Hosea 1, 3, and 4. So he went and took Gomer, the daughter of Diblaim, which conceived and bare him a son. And Yahweh said unto him, call his name Jezreel. For yet a little while, and I will avenge the blood of Jezreel upon the house of Jehu, and will cause to cease the kingdom of the house of Israel. Now, what kingdom was it that he caused to cease? I just read it to you in 2 Kings chapter 10. It was the house of Ahab, the king of Israel, that ruled over all Israel. Okay. Now, the antitype was Gilead Center, bringing up the end of the spiritual Israel of today, of the Advent. And Brother Johnson represented antitypical Ahab in this story. So therefore, all of Gilead Center has to be planed off. In other words, Ahab represents the elite, the last leader of Israel before Yahweh for the type, because Elijah was the one that brought Ahab's house to a close. In the type. So we have to have an antitypical Elijah today has to bring antitypical Ahab's house to a close. Ahab's house is the Adventist church collectively with the Davidians. So Yahweh is well into this bringing this antitypical Ahab's house to a close. Whenever the 144,000 come forth, Ezekiel 9 does his work of separating the wheat and the tares in the Adventist church, then you'll know that the cleansing of the house of Israel will be complete. Elohim's reason for thus naming Hosea's first visionary son was to signify that in a little while he was to avenge the blood of Jezreel upon the house of Jehu. Who was then the king of Israel, then declared to Yahweh, Hosea 1:5, and it shall come to pass at that day that I will break the bow of Israel in the valley of Jezreel. So to break the bow would mean to break the nation's military strength. The history of this is recorded in 2 Kings 10:11. Okay, so now, Israel, though, has to become a theocracy again. In order for Israel to become a theocracy, a church and state, and for Israel to be put in charge, they have to come through a judgment and a purification and be set up. And this is what we're in the process of doing right now with the house of David. Hosea 1:6, and she conceived again and bare a daughter, and Yahweh said unto him, call her name Lo-Ruhamah, for I will no more have mercy upon the house of Israel, but I will utterly take them away. Now this made its fulfillment partially at Gilead Center 2002-2003, but to take it utterly away would mean to take, bring forth 144,000 and then take the tares that have been found in bundles and go burn them. That will be reminiscent of utterly taking away the spiritual Israel of the day as an antitype of what we're just reading about. Well, we have this antitypical scene of Elijah. Now, the one that we be playing Ahab's part today, now that Brother Johnson is gone off the scene, would be the General Conference President of the Seventh-day Adventists, that are still holding the Adventist laity in bondage. So, the contest is between Elijah and Ahab yet, until the 144,000 comes forth. The child's name was to denote the complete destruction of the house of Israel, the 10-tribe kingdom. Now, this destruction, we know, was accomplished by the king of Assyria, who scattered the people throughout the cities of the Medes. The history of this is found in 2 Kings 18:11. And the king of Assyria did carry away Israel unto Assyria and put them in Halah and in Haber by the river of Gozan, and in the cities of the Medes. Okay, it says Hosea 1:7. But I will have mercy upon the house of Judah, and will save them by the Yahweh, the Elohim, and will not save them by bow, nor by sword, nor by battle, by horses, nor by horsemen. The Yahweh promised to spare the house of Judah from the invasion of the king of Assyria. The history of this incident is recorded in 2 Kings 19:35. And it came to pass that night that the angel of Yahweh went out and smote in the camp of the Assyrian 185,000. And when they arose early in the morning, behold, they were all dead corpse. Okay, Hosea 1:8-9. And when she had weaned Lo-Ruhamah, she conceived and bare a son. And said Yahweh, call his name Lo-Ami, for ye are not my people, and I will not be your Elohim. The name of the third child was to signify that though Israel and Judah were Elohim's chosen people, the day was fast approaching in which they would no longer be called his people. For the fulfillment of this phase of the prophecy brings us to the antitypical apostolic era. Well, actually, no, it's the typical apostolic era. Or is it the antitypical? See, let's see. The name of the third child was to signify that though Israel and Judah were Elohim's chosen people, the day was fast approaching in which they would no longer be called his people. Okay, so that was at the cross. The fulfillment of this phase of prophecy brings us to the typical apostolic era of the apostles with Yahshua setting them up. Okay, separating them from the house of the Pharisees. Hosea 1:10. Yet the number of the children of Israel shall be as the sand of the sea, which cannot be measured nor numbered. And it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said unto them, you are not my people, there it shall be said unto them, you are the sons of the living Elohim. In spite of the calamities that were to overtake the children of Israel, they were to become very numerous. And when they are thus greatly multiplied, they are again to be called the sons of Yahweh. And so here we see a prophecy of the rebellion of Elohim's people and Elohim's rejection of them, as well as their repentance and reacceptance by him. And let us here for a moment discuss the titles Judah and Israel. When superficially read, these titles are as a rule misconstrued and made to mean the identified Jews. But we must not be superficial readers and thinkers. Let us be deep Bible students. Now everyone knows that the identified Jews of today are but a handful, certainly not as the sands of the sea. The innumerable children of Israel therefore cannot be the unbelieving Jews of today. Besides, the identified Jews of today are not the descendants of the 10 tribes kingdom, but of the 2 tribe kingdom. Who then is this multitude of people referred to in the Hosea prophecy? We must not overlook the fact that the gospel of the Yahshua divided the house of Judah into 2 sects, Jewish and Christian, as P.T. Holler called it. But as we learned before, that Christian is a generic term used for people that are of the Protestant world, Sunday keeping world, number one, and people that are not born again, are not born again, and they can never be born again as long as they keep a false day of worship. Number one. Okay, so let's look at this again. It says Jewish and apostolic, Nazarene. When they add that Nazarene, that identifies them with Yahshua. That the apostolic congregation for about 4 years after the resurrection of the Yahshua consisted practically only of the Jews. plenty, well, they're supposed to, because Yahshua told them before he left, went back to heaven, he said, go not in the way of the Samaritans or the Gentiles. Go you ready to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And they were commanded to do that for the first 3.5 years. Plainly then, the second 3.5 years, before ending the 7-year period, plainly then the original apostolics were full-blooded Jews. The apostolic church is only a branch of the Jewish church, but they and their descendants have, through the years, lost their racial identity. Then, too, the descendants of both Israel and Judah, who through the years of captivity lost their identity, as did the Jews who embraced the apostolic Nazarene belief or faith. And that faith would be faith in the blood of the Yahshua, or faith in the blood of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua. According to prophecy, must also have greatly multiplied. Plainly then, many who are taken as Gentiles are but unidentified descendants of ancient Judah. Plainly then, many who are taken as Gentiles are but unidentified descendants of ancient Judah, Israel, and the Jewish believers. And he called it Jewish Christian. I said, so a lot of these that were calling themselves Gentiles were actually Jews. For the apostolic congregation herself is, as we have seen, a Jewish Christian church. So this should have read, for the apostolic congregation herself is, as we have seen, a Jewish Gentile apostolic. Not Jewish Christian church, but a Jewish apostolic Gentile. Okay, these descendants of Jacob who were assimilated by the Gentile nation, therefore, were to multiply as the sand of the sea. They are the ones who, after becoming Christians, are again called the sons of the living Elohim, becoming believers in the Nazarene Creed. Of those who first embraced the apostolic faith, the Apostle Peter speaks up, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of the Elohim, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy. 1 Peter 2:10. And the Apostle John says, but as many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of Yahweh, even unto them that believe on his name. John 1:12. Now we see that the prophecy of Hosea 1 begins with the house of Israel and Judah, and brings us down to the stream of time unto the Christian era. Alright, they wanted that generic term. Everybody wanted it. The Catholics wanted it. Everybody coveted that their title Christian, meaning followers of Christ, coming out of the Christ era. So they adopted that identity. Hosea 1:11. Then shall the children of Judah and the children of Israel be gathered together, and appoint themselves one head, and they shall come up out of the land, for great shall be the day of Jezreel. For the word of Yahweh therefore definitely declares that the subjects of the torn down kingdoms, Judah and Israel, as Christians. In other words, V.T. Holliff, Ellen G. White was shown that the Seventh-day Adventist is the spiritual Israel of today, and so I have yet to see V.T. Holliff use this here spiritual Israel. He chooses to use this title Christians. Let's read this in the light of spiritual Israel. Let's read this again. For the word of Yahweh therefore definitely declares that the subjects of the torn down kingdoms, Judah and Israel, as representing spiritual Israel, along with the Gentiles that have joined them, will gather together and appoint themselves a king. Isn't this interesting? They're going to join together in the last days now and appoint themselves a king. So you're going to have the Gentiles having come and joined the spiritual house of Israel. Okay. And then it's after that that it says that they appoint them king. In a similar symbolism, the prophet was told that after many days of the obscurity and wandering, shall the children of Israel return and seek the Yahshua their Savior and David their king. Evidently David is the one head whom they appoint, and shall fear the Yahshua and his goodness in the latter days. Hosea 3:5. Okay, so in a similar symbolism, the prophet was told that after many days of the obscurity and wandering, shall the children of Israel return. Well, then those that had wandered in the days of obscurity and wandering, these were ancient Israel, lives that died with their names in the Lamb's Book of Life, and so therefore they have to be resurrected in these last days. And they were only introduced to David and Yahshua back then, as a team that was working in tandem with each other. So they were familiar with Yahshua and David as partners, making up this ensign. They made up the ensign back then. David and Yahshua, that's where you get your type for the ensign. And that's when these people are resurrected. The only thing they know is what they went in the grave with, knowing. And that was Yahshua and David has got to be sought out somewhere whenever they come, whenever they appear on the scene again. So it says, continuing with the same family illustration and pointing to the Christian era, or the antitypical apostolic era, Yahshua commands. Well, no, this is the apostolic era. Hosea 2:1, say ye unto your brethren, Ami, and to your elder sisters, Ruama. Here we see that the names of the two children of chapter 1 are again mentioned, but the first two letters of each name have been dropped. Though Ruama has become Ruama, and Lo Ami has become Ami, now the fact that these are the brother and sister of Jezreel bears out the truth that the one whom the Yahweh commands to speak unto them is Jezreel, the firstborn of the three. He is to deliver the message to his brethren, Ami and Ruama. Okay, so the antitypical Jezreel of the day then would be antitypical Elijah, David. And he'd have to deliver a message to his brother and younger brother and sister. Okay, look at this now. Now, what is it all about? It is not too difficult to see. The one unto whom Elohim speaks, Jezreel, represents the prophet. His brother and sister, Ami and Ruama, can only represent the church membership, both male and female. In actuality, Jezreel must deliver Elohim's message unto them. And here is the message. Now, the V.T. Hollis thought that he was giving that message to the Adventist Church. I was reading, he said, we've got to go to the Adventist Church and bear this message to mother, to the mother. Hosea 2:2. Plead with your mother, plead, for she is not my wife, neither am I her husband. Let her therefore put away her whoredoms out of her sight and her adulteries from between her breasts. The fact that the Yahweh himself called the prophet Hosea's visionary wife his own wife reveals that she represents the church, that Hosea represents the Yahweh, and that while Jezreel represents the mouthpiece of Yahweh, and in this case, this Jezreel would be Elijah, and typically Elijah, Ami and Ruama represents the church membership, male and female. The younger siblings of Jezreel, they're his brother and sister. In childhood, Hosea 1, they represent the Old Testament church, the Hebrews. But in their youth, having their names altered, Hosea 2, they represent the New Testament church, the, they call it Christians here. I call it the Apostolic Nazarene Creed. Now the laity at the command of Yahweh are through prophet to plead with the church. Therefore the Reformation here called forth is sponsored by the inspiration and carried out by the laity. It is a long expected revival and reformation unto the latest sins, and hence a layman's movement called forth by the revived spirit of prophecy. As you get this revived spirit of prophecy, what does it say? The third angel's message is going to be repeated with the addition to the fourth and fifth angel having joined it, making it swell into the loud cry. This is the reviving of the spirit of prophecy. From this prophecy, you see the denomination is by the Elohim himself charged with whoredom. With having illicit connections with the world, this lewdness she must give up if she is to obtain favor with Yahweh. These are not man's words, you understand, but Elohim. And should we not be grateful that he is doing everything he can to save us? The church must repent, says Yahweh. Hosea 2:3. Lest I strip her naked and sit her as in the day that she was born, and make her as a wilderness, and sit her like a dry land, and slay her with thirst. For the denomination often boasts of gain and membership as children, but Elohim charges that those whom she brings in are illegitimate children. And how could it be otherwise if the church herself is corrupted with the world? What else could her converts be? What would free them from the worldly influences of she, the ministry, is herself tainted with the practices of the world? Indeed, her converts cannot be lawful children. Hosea 2:5. For their mother hath played the harlot, she that conceived them hath done shamefully. For she said, I will go after my lovers, that give me my bread and my water, my wool and my flax, mine oil and my drink. The church is gone after the world because she mistakenly thinks that her support comes from worldlings, from her lovers. Hosea 2:6. Therefore, behold, I will hedge up thy way with thorns, and make a wall that she shall not find her path. Here we see that the church proposes, but that Elohim disposes. Her plans do not work out as expected. She loses her way as does a ship without chart or compass, drifting at sea. Hosea 2:7. And she shall follow after her lovers, but she shall not overtake them. And she shall seek them, but shall not find them. Then shall she say, I will go and return unto my first husband, for then was it better with me than now. Again, we see that trials and adverse circumstances are for our good, for thus is the church brought to her right senses. Hosea 2:8-12. For she did not know that I gave her corn and wine, and oil and multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal. Therefore will I return and take away my corn in the time thereof, and my wine in the season thereof, and will recover my wool and my flax, given to cover her nakedness. And now will I discover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and none shall deliver her out of mine hand. And I will also cause all her mercies, her feast days, her new moons, and her Sabbath, and all her solemn feasts, and I will destroy her vines and her fig tree, whereof she has said, these are my rewards that my lovers have given me. and I will make them a forest, and the beasts of the field shall eat them. From these verses we see that it was not just such a departure from Yahweh that caused the church in her early apostolic era to lose her path and all her possessions, including her feast days, her new moons, her Sabbath, and all her solemn feasts. That's what happened today, 2002. Gloria Johnson lost all the new moons, the Sabbath, and the solemn feast days. He lost them all. The only thing he held on to was the timepiece for doing them, and that was the creation calendar. This is exactly what happened when the dark ages of the religion began. The pagans in whose clutches the church fell were no more to blame for the church's going into the darkness than were the Chaldeans of destroying Judah and her temple. The real blame falls on the church herself, and this should be a lasting lesson unto each of us, that we should never again have illicit connection with the world and should never depart from the Yahweh. Now, let us read what other experiences the church was to go through. Hosea 2:13 and 14. It says, and I will visit upon her the days of Balaam, wherein she burned incense unto them, and she decked herself with her earrings and her jewels, and she went after her lovers and forgot me, saith Yahweh. Therefore, behold, I will lure her and bring her into the wilderness and speak comfortably unto her. Notice that the Yahweh visits the church not when she is in good spiritual standing with him, but when she is in her greatest idolatry. Indeed, he could not visit her at a more opportune time, because only when she is in the greatest darkness can she possibly discern light, and her condition, you know, can never improve unless he should call on her. Thus it was in John the Baptist's day, also when the Protestant Reformation came, and thus it is today. Elohim knows how to save. Saving is his chief concern. Yahweh requires certain things of his people. If they say, I will not give up my heart to do this thing, Yahweh lets them go on in the supposed wise judgment without the heavenly wisdom until this scripture, Isaiah 28:13, is fulfilled. You are not to say, I will follow the Yahweh's guidance up to a certain point that is in harmony with my judgment, and then hold fast to your own ideas, refusing to be molded after the Yahweh's similitude. Let the question be asked, is this the will of the Yahweh? If not, is this the opinion or judgment of so-and-so? Testimonies 4:19, Ministers. And what is Elohim's promise now to his church? Hosea 2:15. That I will give her vineyards from thence, and the valley of Acre for a door of hope. And she shall sing there as in the days of her youth, as in the days when she camped out of the land of Egypt. You know what this here valley of Acre for a door of hope is? This is the house of David. The house of David owns the valley of Acre. Okay, so the only hope for Yahweh's people, as they come through this valley of Acre, they have to come through this Mount Zion at the 12th hour. They have to come up to it, come through the judgment, and enter into the kingdom here in order to escape out of the valley of Acre into the kingdom. All right, it says, as a result of her vengeance being restored, here's that word restored again, her vengeance restored, and also of her being given the valley of Acre for a door of hope. What's her vineyards? 12 tribes of Israel. They have 12 parcels of land, one to each one. They have their own vineyards. All right? The church is the same as in the days of her youth, as when she came up out of the land of out of Egypt and lodged in the promised land. Where could her vineyards be but her own land? And if the valley of Acre is a door of hope to her, what can it be but what it was in Joshua's time? Removal of the Achans of today from the midst of Isaiah 2:15. And how do you do that? By the judgment being set. Okay, indeed, this is her only hope. In fact, even more so than it was in the day of Israel's defeat at Ai, the gate to the promised land. Ai was the gate to the promised land. That was your valley of Acre, door of hope. They had to get rid of Achan, and then they went back and did the job over and won. The class who do not feel aggrieved, over their own spiritual detention, nor mourn over the sins of others, will be left without the seal of Yahweh. Yahweh Yahshua commissions his messengers, a man with a slaughtering weapon in their hands. Go ye after him through the city and smite. Let not your eyes spare, neither have your pity. Say utterly, old and young, men, maidens, and little children, and women, but come not near any man upon whom is the marking to get my sanctuary. Then they began to ancient men for the house. This is your valley of Acre, door of hope. Ezekiel 9. If you come through that, you come through that door of hope. Here we see that the church, the Yahshua sanctuary, was the first to feel the stroke of the wrath of Yahweh. For the ancient men are those under whom Elohim had given great love, and who stood as the guardians of the spiritual interests of the people, had betrayed their trust. They had taken the position that we need not look for miracles in the manifestations of Elohim's power as in the former days. Times have changed. These words strengthen their unbelief, and that say, Yahweh will not do good, not really do evil. He is too merciful to visit his people in judgment. Thus peace and safety is a cry for men who will never again lift up their voices like a trumpet to show Elohim's people their transgression in the house of Jacob their sin. These dumb dogs that would not bark are the ones who feel the just vengeance of an offended Elohim. Men and maidens and little children all perish together. Testimony, Volume 5, page 211. Hosea 2:16. And it shall be at that day, saith Yahweh, that thou shalt call me Ishi, and shalt call me no more Bela. That's Baal. That's Bela is another name for Satan, the devil. So it is that after hypocrites and sinners are taken out of the way, the church shall no longer call the Savior Bela, Lord. Did you get that? What did Brother Johnson call Yahweh and Yahshua? He called him Lord. Well, what are we learning here? And we know that he was that hypocrite there in Matthew 24:45, the one of the two. One was a hypocrite, and that was your leader, and that was Verlus. So it's after hypocrites and sinners, those that stayed with him, and after judgment was set, and are taken out of the way, then the church shall no longer call the Savior Bela. And by then, by that time, my wife and I, we were 100% entrenched in the sacred name. We would never let Lord or Jesus or God or any of that pass our lips. But the Lord was down at Kermit. The last several years we was there, we used the sacred name. And Brother Johnson, he would try to conform a little bit. He'd say Yahvah, Y-A-H-V-A-H. He wouldn't use the correct spelling. Then he said, Yahweh, Yahweh, Yahweh God. Yeshua, Jesus Christ, but he'd always make sure he had that pagan title if he ever used it. So I just read it here. So it is that after hypocrites and sinners are taken out of the way, the church shall no longer call the Savior Bala, Lord, but she shall call him Ishi, husband, for the significance is that then he will truly be her husband, whereas now he is unto her as it were only some great personality. Since Alan DeLong left here and met this new partner of his partner in crime, La Sharon, she also got a new name, and she demands that you no longer call it Yahshua and Yahweh Elohim. She said those are names for Baal. She said you're to call it Yasharon. Yasharon. It's Yasharon now, or Yesharon. Yasharon. So she gave it a new name, and now she's telling, and Alan, boy, whenever you say Yahshua now, Alan, he says, well, okay, for your sake, Yahshua, but for me, that's not the name. So Alan, you see, he's apostatized too and become a hypocrite. Well, he was notorious in using the sacred name with us, even down at Kermit. Hosea 2:18. And in that day will I make a covenant for them with the beasts of the field and with the fowls of heaven and with the creeping things of the ground, and I will break the bow and the sword and the battle out of the earth, and will make them to lie down safely. The earth and parts of the United States right now, the bow and the sword and the battle is in the earth. That's between these two brothers, Isaac and Ishmael. The battle is waging sore right now. We have an antitypical Jehu. We have some new light on Obama. Obama is antitypical Cyrus, and he's antitypical Jehu.
Trump.
Trump is antitypical Cyrus, and he's antitypical Jehu. We're fixing to learn something new about all of this, folks. Here is peace, the only peace that one can have today. If he so desires, this is peace overflowing with safety. For the saints after the sinners have been removed from among them and need not fear beasts, fowls, or creeping things of the ground, neither gun nor sword. They shall lie down in confidence and assurance that nothing shall hurt them, for he whose fame is in his hand will thoroughly purge his floor and gather his wheat into the garner, that he will burn up the chaff of the unquenchable fire. Matthew 3:12. Hosea 2:19-21. And I will betroth thee unto me forever. Yea, I will betroth thee unto me in righteousness, and in judgment, and in loving kindness, and in mercies. I will even betroth thee unto me in faithfulness, and thou shalt know the Yahweh, and it shall come to pass in that day, I will. Hear, saith Yahweh, I will hear the heavens, and they shall hear the earth, and saying that the Yahweh will hear the heavens, and the heavens the earth, inspiration actually says that when these things take place on earth, Yahweh is to be in the midst of his people, that he is to speak from earth, and his subjects in heaven shall hear him. Hosea 2:22. And the earth shall hear the corn, and the wine, and the oil, and they shall hear Jezreel. Okay, so they're going to hear the truth that this Jezreel has to teach. This Jezreel is antitypical Elijah. To hear the corn, the wine, and the oil is to hear them speak. And since real corn, wine, and oil cannot speak, they must be figurative of spiritual food and drink, figurative of the mighty message in the great and dreadful day of the Yahweh. And by the fact that the people of the earth shall hear Jezreel, the mouthpiece of Elohim, it is made clear that the call come out of her, my people, that she be not partakers of her sins, and that she receive not of her plagues. Revelation 18:4. Did you know that Antipater Jezreel is as Elijah makes that call to come out of Babylon? But accomplishes the point of work. Those who come or go out go into the aforementioned place of the safety, and those who do not hear Jezreel shall perish, as did the Jews who rejected the prophets in their day. Now let us now review our study of the day by following this graphic illustration. Here we see Jezreel, Lo Ruama and Lo Ami, as little children pictorially representing the kingdoms of Israel and Judah in their calamities, a complete but brief history of the Old Testament church and her people. Then we see that the letters Lo are dropped from the names Ruama and Ami, denoting a change of names. Jews are called Christians. The Jews called them actually apostles, apostolic, meaning mercy and my people, instead of no mercy and not my people. Jezreel's name, though, remains the same as he represents the prophets of Yahweh, and all times this shows that they are the descendants of Jacob, and therefore we must hear and obey them. The family, as little children, represent the people of the Old Testament church, and as youth represent the New Testament church, show that spiritual growth has been made through the streams of time, and they are now grown, able to take strong meat, and truly to be the reformers, the church, and the missionaries to the world. So here's your antipical reformers, the house of David, the 144,000. We also see that the same mother and the same father, along with the same children, represent both the Old and New Testament churches, that the descendants of Jacob in reality are the old olive tree, Romans 11:24, that the only way the Gentiles can get into the kingdom is for them to be grafted into the old olive tree. So we represent the old olive tree, the house of David, the old olive tree. Jew or Gentile, it must join if they are to be in the kingdom. They're going to have to come right here. This can be done only by our own consent and action. And now, while the Spirit is pleading with us, and while the Yeshua stands ready to do the work, no one need be excluded. No one need remain a lukewarm little sin unless he so chooses. My hope is that you will choose life rather than death. Next, we see if the church as a whole, as a family, is composed of a father and mother, and of sons and daughters, that the father is Yahweh, that the wife is the ministry, those who bring in converts, that the children are the laity. We see also that the church woman was married to the Yeshua in her youth, in the day she came out of Egypt, and although the ministry as a whole never advanced from one truth to another, the church wife continued by being replaced by new and successive ministers time and again. And now that she is deep in the whoredom, obviously she is again to be replaced by a new ministry, and thus will she become faithful to her father. That this will be accomplished by taking away the sinners from her midst. Then will she be given her vineyards, and then will she and all her children live in peace and safety. Clearly then, lewdness actually shall actually flee away. And thus revival and reformation brought forth by this layman's movement shall accomplish its given work. And so you can see, so you see that as a result of the children's protest, the whole family of Yahweh shall live happily in peace and safety forevermore. What does that tell us? Our protest into Gilead City was a protest shown out here in this allegory of Hosea, of her children protesting against her lewdness. And this is what promoted the kingdom of peace forevermore for the future. This brings the first lesson of this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call at number 11. Click on our audio archive. And we're going to close now with a song. searching for the man of Galilee, but Elijah did. Well, I'm searching for the Lord. That came to the throne in the form of a man. It came from above. And he had a definite plan to save this world from all the sin and misery. Yes, I'm searching for the man, searching for the man of Galilee. When you walk among men, he taught the finer points of life. He healed the sick. He relieved the suffering and strife. He gave them hope. He made the blind be seen. He was the man, he was the man of Galilee. When he walked among men, he taught them how to live with a matter of time. In the end, he must forgive in order to climb those golden stairs to victory. Yes, he was the man, he was the man of Galilee. Well, I'm searching for the law, been searching a long time. You see the kind of law, the kind that sets men free. It's Constantine and of harmony. Yes, he was the man, he was the man of Galilee. Well, I'm searching for the law that came to this world in the form of a man. It came